towards Ormond-Roy. Brilliant save it in. Walsh has scored. Leicester City are in dreamland now.
Lovely close control there by Weller. Chance on for Bertrand on a whack one. It's a beautiful goal. What a goal!
Leicester City!
Hello and welcome to For Fox Sake. My name is Pete Selby and alongside me is Rob Hayes, a newly refreshed after your holiday, Rob. We've done a podcast and you're back at work and you're feeling the effects of being on holiday.
Oh, massively, massively. I was very, very relaxed on holiday. I managed 17 days off with the Easter weekend and a few weekends in between. And I've done 4 days this week. We're recording Thursday evening and I am shattered. I'm already desperate for the weekend. But I've got 3/4 of an hour or so to talk to you about Leicester City before bedtime. You're welcome.
Yes. Well, we'll be away actually from this weekend. We're away for a good while for a holiday, holiday/honeymoon as well. So I suppose those fans listening, listeners to the podcast who will be like, oh my god, they're not going to do another podcast for a week or two. Well, first of all, there's plenty of games to get stuck into, so there's that. But also, it's a honeymoon as well. So basically, yeah, do bear that in mind. It's not just right, Pete's just going away. It's going to be great. So that's that. So we won't be doing pod for a while. Although I will take the recorder with me, Rob. So
don't you dare. This is your honeymoon. I am speaking on behalf of your newish wife. Don't you dare. Or is this for work-related purposes, not just in case we need to do a podcast, surely?
No, the equipment will be taken with me for work purposes as well, to maybe do a few highlights of a certain team who we will preview as well. But yes, I had a good day. I've just been over to Newmarket today with racing, so that was all good. But back and talking a lot of things Leicester. I was talking a lot of Leicester City chat, actually. So there's a lot of people who are on the same wavelength as ourselves, which is either a good thing or kind of a bad thing. Anyway, let's get down to the chat. So the last podcasts we spoke about the finance and we spoke about the on the field stuff. Now, when it comes to the finance, I think we just briefly mentioned that there was a statement released, and it turns out that kind of Leicester were true and correct in their thinking by basically whatever we get demoted by the Premier League or in terms of punishment for that season, it cannot be applied this season to the Championship. So whatever the Premier League decides, or whoever in theory decides, is our fine or points deduction, which is probably right, for the season we went down, that punishment will have to be in the Premier League. So hopefully next year. It can't be put through this year, even though the Football League wanted it to. They actually wanted it to happen this year. It's actually against the rules. The rules, which were quite well explained by the likes of Rob Dawson, etc., a few weeks ago on Sky Sports, by saying, hang on, saying that it can't be put through this season because the Premier League clubs voted for it and Leicester weren't a Premier League club at the time. So basically it can't happen. But it's interesting how the Football League actually tried to make it happen this year, because obviously they've fell out with Leicester. They've massively fell out with Leicester. So kind of 1-0 to the football club on that front. I doubt that scoreline is going to remain the same, but there we go. So just a slight little add to the finance podcast of last time since we last spoke, Rob.
Yeah, that's pretty much the only addition to that. So if you haven't managed to listen yet to our bumper edition 2-part special, what's going on and off the field in 2 separate podcasts, then, I mean, make sure you've got yourself a few hours and a couple of brews and some snacks to sit through them. But we sort of unpicked it in a little bit more, in a little bit more detail. But it was, yeah, that was the one question mark we had, wasn't it? Because some areas were saying that the EFL would have the capability to deduct points from Leicester for rules broken in the Premier League, as long as both the Premier League and the EFL agreed with it. But it turns out actually that's a load of twaddle. But I think you're right, Pete. I think that's Leicester, the massive underdogs in, it's like FA Cup third round weekend, isn't it? And we're the massive underdogs, about eight tiers below the powers that be. We've gone 1-0 up early because the cameras are there from the BBC, but actually we're probably going to end up losing the tie comfortably 4 or 5-1.
Yeah, I think so. But that's all to come. Essentially, those two podcasts of last time, you could actually listen to those now and nothing's really changed, because since when we did that podcast, it was on the back of the appalling game against Millwall. And obviously we've had the appalling game then since against Plymouth. And obviously the finance things really still applies, because obviously it needs to be sorted out and it will be at the end of the season. So if you take away everything we say in that podcast on the pitch about Millwall and just add the word Plymouth, and then when it comes to the preview of the Plymouth game, pretty much what we said applies to the next games we've got to play. It's all rather similar, but let's talk about on the pitch stuff. Now, Millwall away was terrible. A really lacklustre performance. Slack, uninterested, arrogant in a way. You know, that sort of performance, really bad. I generally think the Plymouth game was worse. The first thing to say, though, and easily, is fair play to Plymouth. You know, big crowd in, massive game against, arguably their biggest league game in a many, many, many years. They've obviously had games to get promoted, save off relegation, etc. But you're talking about recent Premier League champions in a league game and top of the table in a league that they've not been in for a long time. So it's one of their biggest games for years. and they won. Great atmosphere, fantastic. You know, well done, well done. But we're talking about Leicester. And it was strangely tragic, I think, this performance, Rob, because we have, again, like Millwall, no problems. Goalkeeper, defence, midfield, fine. Okay, we'll come on to the goal itself, because it was an error by Walt Vass, who has been off the ball for a few games. I thought he's been playing pretty well for the last few months, but it was a mistake. What did I say? It's like he was fielding or hitting cricket, the way he bent down on one knee. But it's the final third again, and everything we said, and we're not patting ourselves on the back here, but everything we said last time happened again. All the negatives against Millwall, all the areas of the game that Leicester have been awful in the last number of games, were highlighted massively here, live on TV, on the Friday night game in front of everyone. But they were shown up even more here. They didn't create anything against Millwall until injury time. Here, they had plenty of opportunities in and around the penalty area, and were found to be clueless, embarrassing, in need of intervention from the bench, in need of a kind of advice, and in need of a level head, and ultimately in need of probably experience, all of which were not on the pitch, never came from the bench. And ultimately, it was a really embarrassing display by the side going forward, by the people on the bench, and overall it was really, really embarrassing. Nothing to do with the defeat. It was embarrassing the way Leicester attacked that game and attacked the Plymouth goal for me. In terms of individual displays as well, let's get it right. But overall, it was embarrassing.
You see, that's interesting, because when you were building up to this and comparing it to the Millwall game, I thought you were going to say that the Plymouth game, yes, it's still a 1-0 defeat against quite a poor team, but I thought you were going to say that you actually thought it was a better performance. I think, and put me right if I'm wrong here in a minute once I've had my spiel, but I think you're coming from it from the point of view that this time chances were created, and the embarrassment therefore and the reason it felt worse than Millwall from your point of view, was because those chances were drastically missed or poor decisions or poor execution. Because if I take it as a sort of, as the attitude towards the game in the first half and the pace with which Leicester moved the ball and their clear intent to properly have a go at Plymouth, as they should be doing against a team that are battling against relegation and on the back of that horrendous result against Millwall, then I thought, actually, bar the goal, which, as you said, boils down to individual error, but perhaps would not have had the opportunity to isolate Wout Faes if the system wasn't so rigid. But I'll come on to that in a second. But I thought overall, the first half at Plymouth, in terms of the intent to try and attack and to do so and to create chances, was actually miles better than Millwall. It looked to me like there was a reaction there. The second half was a completely different story from my point of view, because it was almost like they'd gone, right, well, we've tried that for 45 minutes. It's not worked. So we're going to slow things down again. And I don't think the players tried anything different to try and find a way through against Plymouth. And I know that 99% of their thought processes and decisions are dictated by the manager, because he's made it very clear that they practice every scenario to within an inch of its life. So they know when they've got the ball in a certain part of the pitch, in a certain phase of play, they know which decisions Maresca wants them to make. And it's partly that, I think, that is stifling the attack. It's mostly that, to be honest, because you're not giving any players any real freedom. Players like Mavadidi and Fatawu, they're both almost sort of like maverick wingers, because how many times this season, especially earlier in the season, have we seen them just do something a little bit special? A little drop of the shoulder inside, great finish from distance, or a trick to get by someone and get to the byline. That's 90-odd percent of the time not in the DNA, not in the blueprint of Maresca's style of football. Is get the ball, slow it down, roll it back inside, and we'll keep moving it side to side until hopefully a gap appears. And if, God forbid, Patson Daka ends up in that gap, then watch the horror show unfold. But I thought we tried to score goals, which, coming back round to the beginning there, is I'm kind of in agreement with you in the sense that that almost made it more embarrassing, the fact that we created so many opportunities and couldn't score a single goal against a very poor team.
That's the thing. It seemed to me like a FA Cup match. It felt like an FA Cup game against lower league opposition. Again, massive respect to Plymouth, but it felt like that. You know, we were by far the better team, created the chances, as you said, in the first half. You know, we moved the ball quicker, but it seemed to me, again, we were playing against just a weaker opposition as compared to Millwall. So, but also the way that we moved the ball was okay. It was only okay, but for this side, you expect that to happen. But this time we got into those areas. So absolutely right. It is a different disappointment, really, compared to Millwall, where we didn't create a single thing. Here we did create, but it was just tragic, really. And everyone can miss chances. Leeds at the moment are going through games where they're missing a whole host of chances. So when it comes to nerves, etc., it's a slightly, I mentioned in the previous pod, that it's a slightly different bottle almost, you know, the fact that they are creating the chances, but they're not taking them. Here we've just got in so many chances of not even the misses. I'm not talking about the misses from Daka. I'm talking about the chances where we got down the side of the penalty area, where we had the ball in the final third and we just failed to create. And it was woeful. I thought Mavadidi was awful. His final pass was just completely missing. His shoulders were dropped. His individual efforts were poor. Fatawu on the other side, I'm not entirely sure how he stayed on the pitch at all, how he wasn't dragged. Again, lacking in confidence, completely lacking in confidence. His final pass and cross was absolutely awful. Like, really, completely, not even slightly long or short, like really, really poor. The guy in the middle, obviously, Patson Daka, had a complete nightmare. A game which might define his career at Leicester. Not the goals he scored away in Moscow, what, four of them. It will be this, because it would be quite... It wouldn't be a shock if he doesn't play again this season. I think he will play again this season, but I wouldn't be surprised if that's that, because it was that bad. His confidence is not even through the... Not on the floor, it's through the floor. He's standing on a manhole cover and it goes all the way. It's gone down to another level. Horrible misses. And not just missing the target, half missing the ball. We've seen him miss the ball a few times. Terrible header of a ball, like really bad. And then, obviously, the chance just before he was substituted, where I don't know what that was. I don't know what it was. But that, what... it didn't look like, I think Matt Piper described it, it didn't look like a professional footballer, unfortunately. And just no idea. But it's worse than that, because when we picked our sides, and we're not standing there beating the drum, are we, saying, why didn't you pick our sides? But there was so much on the bench and so many options that could have happened, could have changed throughout the second half, before the second half at half time, and none of them happened. None of them. And that's where I think this game really highlights the issues with Enzo, and that's his complete confidence in his system, which has worked so far this season. But in-game management, when it's not working, and not when it's not working when you're failing to take your chances, where you're at home and it's 0-0, but you're dominating and you're creating your chance and it's still slick football. But when you're completely dominating possession, and it's so apparent that you need to change the formation, have players in the centre to actually finish off the chance, and nothing happens.
I'll pick up on your point about Mavadidi and Fatawu, because we've talked, and Maresca's talked about the fact that players are tired, fatigue is an issue, it's a long season, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. So I've just pulled up the team sheet, the squad for the game against Plymouth. And Fatawu and Mavadidi have played a lot of minutes. And, you know, if you're choosing your strongest Leicester 11 and you need two wide players, you're picking those two. I'm not questioning that for a second, but when a few players have gone off the boil a little bit, when they're slightly out of form, surely you at least, even if you're starting them, you have contingency plans on the bench. But I'm looking at the bench, and what you've got there is three centre-backs. You've got three defenders on the bench, Cody, Doyle and Nelson. You've got Choudhury and Pratt, and then Atgun's the only player in a bench of nine players who can play out wide. So that he didn't give himself, with the squad selection, didn't give himself the opportunity to say, to pull Fatawu off, really, or to pull both of them off and say, let's have fresh legs down both sides. McAteer was fit. He told us that in the press conference. The only unavailable player was Harry Suter. He'd probably made the bench as well. Four centre-backs on the bench. No,
all Brighton fit.
All Brighton was fit, as far as I recall. I remember seeing a headline on the Leicester City website a couple of days before the game, Suter the only absentee. You've also got Wanya Marcel. Now, he's raw, he's young, but... If Mavadidi's not having a great game, 70 minutes, Enzo's favourite substitution time, chuck Marcel on and see if he can have a go at the fullback for a bit and just see what happens. It couldn't have got any worse, could it?
Or Leicester are 3-0 up.
Yeah, exactly. Either way. But it's this now, and some people have talked about sort of a bit of casual arrogance amongst the players. I know Matt Piper's used a similar phrase on Radio Leicester. And I think there's more than a casual arrogance about Enzo Maresca. Look, months and months ago he said, this is the way I'm playing football. If you don't like it, I'm out, basically. I'm out. Not if you don't like it, you can bugger off. If you don't like it, I'm gone. And some would argue that hopefully when Leicester get promoted at the end of the season, that he was absolutely right to stick to his guns. And if and when we do get promoted to the Premier League under Enzo Maresca, I would say thank you very much. You've got us to where we needed to be. You have fulfilled your brief. But there would be huge, huge reservations going forward about his ability as a manager, because he is so blinkered. And I'm going to use that to move into one of the contributing factors to Leicester conceding that goal. Because Plymouth were happy to do what most of the teams have done against us, certainly in the second half of the season. Sit back, soak it up, just kind of watch it like a tennis match where the ball just moves side to side in front of you. Make yourself nice and compact, because Leicester are going to struggle to penetrate you. And then hit them on the counter down the sides, because Leicester don't have a right back. On paper, and maybe when the game just about starts to kick off, yes, we do. And this is no fault thrown at Ricardo Pereira, because he's doing what he's told to do. But that ball goes into that channel, I lost count, double figures amount of times for Plymouth on the break. Even if there wasn't a Plymouth player there at that particular point, they almost had it ingrained in them. If you get the ball back and you're under a bit of pressure, just stick it in that channel. Because there's such a wide open space there that even if there's not a Plymouth player there, it's going to give us a bit of a breather and we can get up the pitch a little bit. When Bundu picks up the ball on the left-hand side, Wout Fass lets him make 20 yards. He lets him advance 20 yards until he's inside the penalty area. Now, those of you that have listened to the podcast for a while will know that I am a very, very amateur centre-back, now partially retired from 11-a-side football, but one of the main things you're taught as a defender from day dot is keep them out of the box. If he picks that ball up 15 yards outside the penalty area, you at least need to show some intent to move towards him. Wout Fass didn't take a single step towards him. He just started backpedaling straight away and said, come on, in you come, into the box, there you go. And then he gets his little cricket long barrier down and says, bend it round me, beautiful, I'll shield the goalkeeper's view while I'm doing it. Nice one. There was no reason for him not to go out, other than, I don't know, whether he's tired, whether he's lacking a bit of confidence, whether he thinks, because he's an international footballer who's recently been playing in the Premier League and this guy's backstory starts well down the leagues, he thinks, oh, well, come on then, I'll have you. No bother. I'll back off, pinch it off you. I'll make it look sort of casual, Rolls-Royce defending. He didn't have any need to do it because players were recovering into Wout Fass's position. I think Ricardo probably could have worked a little bit harder on his recovery, and if he had, he might have got himself between the ball and the goal as he struck it. But if I'm Ricardo there, I'm screaming at Fass, I'm saying, get out to him, I'm in your position. Whether he did or not, I don't know. But we've talked about communication and lack of, or the apparent lack of vocal leadership on the pitch. You're saying, Fass, get out to him, because you can then use the touchline to help you as your defender, because you can force him down there. If he has to play back inside, then everything slows down and you know you've got bodies inside there. And Ricardo's tucked in at right centre-back, so Wout Fass is just now the right back. And he has to keep him outside the box. It was just so passive that, and it ultimately, because of the failings at the other end of the pitch, it cost us the game.
It did. When you read out those substitutes, again, you know, you there with the back line, absolutely right with Fass. But when you're looking at going forward, Cody, defender, Doyle, defender, Chowdhury, defender, Starcheck, the goalkeeper, Nelson, defender. You're looking at forward-thinking players. Jamie Vardy, Tom Cannon, Atgun, and I will put Pratt in there as well because he is a midfielder, really. Obviously, Chowdhury's been playing further back. So that's your options, okay? again, we don't say everyone needs to come on, and if they don't, then it's abysmal. But the whole build-up to this game was purely about being forced to play on a Friday night, only a few days after a long trip to the New Den, to now go to Plymouth. So you play a team with generally, what, a couple of changes, only because one of them, Dakar and Vardy, changed anyway, but hardly anything, basically, not many. And you still only make two subs, one of them being the signposted Dakar and Vardy sub, which was always going to happen. So you change Ndidi for Pratt, which when it happened, I agreed with, because Ndidi was on the pitch and I was like, well, actually, he's not needed. They're sitting back. Ndidi, the disruptor in midfield, is not needed. Getting forward, he's actually more of a hindrance. So Pratt in midfield for Ndidi, that seemed to me like a very sensible decision. How Dakar survived on the pitch until the 67th minute, I have no idea. There was a great shot once of Enzo Maresca, and it was actually of Jamie Vardy. He was sat on the bench, and he was looking around, and now he wasn't pulling faces, but it was kind of like, why am I sat here? This is in the second half. Dakar's missed another chance. It's like, what am I? And then you've got near him, Tom Cannon, sitting there going, what the hell are we doing here? Like, why aren't we on the pitch? This guy's having a nightmare. Now, Patson Dakar, it could have been Mavididi, it could have been Dewsbury Hall, it could have been anyone, okay? We don't need to sit here and just say Dakar shouldn't play for the club, he's absolutely useless. We all know what he's like, okay? He just had an absolute shocker, okay? But he should have been dragged early. He shouldn't have been actually on the pitch in the second half, for me. But when you have the amount of possession around the penalty area that Leicester had, it doesn't take a brain surgeon, or doesn't take a football genius, doesn't take Pep Guardiola, or it doesn't take a no-nonsense kind of Sam Allardyce approach to football. When you've got Tom Cannon, a sizeable centre-forward, the biggest centre-forward we've got really at the club, and you're tossing balls into the penalty area, and as you said, they're sat back and they've got their big men at the back and they're all nice and condensed. Passing Dakar's around, going, bloody hell, you know, what have we got here? You've got all these men. Bring on Tom Cannon. You've got Jamie Vardy, who's one of the most intelligent footballers in terms of movement of a centre forward that the Premier League has seen in the last 10 years, let alone the Championship. If a ball's going to get crossed in from one side or a pass is going to get made into a penalty area, who is the player who's going to be making the first move? It's going to be Jamie Vardy before any defender has even thought about it. That's what he needs to be on the field earlier. Absolute God knows why Cannon wasn't brought on. Obviously, there's a problem there. It might be personal even, but who knows? I don't know. You know, we won't know that. But there's a massive, massive issue there. I cannot for my life understand why he was not brought on. Even in the last 10 minutes, 81 minutes, on comes Cannon. Okay, Clichy and Acho not in the squad. Okay, so that's Cannon. But what you mentioned about the wingers, Atgun, who came on and crossed the ball for Mavididi's winner recently, and he doesn't even make it on the pitch. How? Did that not happen? Atgun, here you go. You come on and we'll just slightly change the back line round. So we've got Fass, you've got Vestergaard, you've got Justin. Tell you what, you come on for Ricardo Pereira, okay? And then you push up and so really, really support the back line, the front line. So you're playing like as a 10 in the centre. So you got two, you know, Dewsbury Hall can then play further back slightly, only slightly, him and Winks. But in the last, say, 10 minutes, no, not that. Not we'll bring on Vardy and we'll bring on Cannon and we'll play two guys in the middle, because Plymouth haven't got a foot in the game at all. They're winning 1-0, they're sitting back and they're trying to defend that for their lives, which they did, and fair play to them. But we'll bring on two centre-forwards to really occupy them and go pretty standard kind of 4-4-2. Two wingers, two centre-forwards and go from there. No. Because at the back, you won't need four at the back. You can leave it with three. Push one up into midfield to keep you three. No, none of that. And there were times in that last 20 minutes where you got the centre-forward, or before that, Dakar, and you've got the two wingers standing outside the penalty area, each side of the penalty area, and there's no one. He's surrounded by green shirts. And he's standing there, and I'm thinking, where is the support? There's nothing. If you can support the midfield with a defender, well, if you're dominating the game possession-wise as Leicester are, surely you can support the centre-forward with a midfielder. But we just lack that. The vocabulary from the bench lacks that. There is nothing. And so watching it in real time, it was really disappointing. But then when you're looking at it back on paper now, and I'm looking at the team sheet again going, and you scratch your head going, how is Cannon and Atgun not come on the field of play? Especially when one of them has literally come on in the last couple of games and made a game-winning cross. it is mind-boggling as to why. But anyway, I have no idea. So I have no idea how that's happened. But anyway, has it cost us? Well, it did in that game, but because of the way the league lies at the moment, it might not cost us overall. But that's it with the Plymouth game for me. But what are your thoughts really on those centre-forward options during Plymouth? Do you agree?
Oh, 100%. And we are definitely not the only people banging on about let's get two up top. Even if you don't want to start with it, even if you're stubborn enough to think, right, 75 minutes in, maybe I need to make a change now. Look, even, and this is completely ridiculous and completely out of the Maresca rule book, but last few minutes, if everything that you've tried for the last 95 hasn't worked, chuck Big Yannick up for a few minutes and see what happens. Have a go. If you're going to need to lump balls in the box, at least put somebody in there that's half decent in the air. Yeah, the centre forward thing's a thing. I think the wide options are. I think Dak is the fall guy, and naturally so, because if you're a striker, you are paid to score goals, and he is paid a ridiculous amount of money not to score goals at the moment. But McAteer earlier on in the season, great energy. I know he's had some injury issues. He wouldn't be able to play long, but he could have come on for the last 15 and at least had a go. And you can have a look at him then and you can say, look, is this kid going to play any part in the last few games of the season? Could his reappearance in the squad, could that just kickstart? Could that be a little bit of boost of energy that just about gets us over the line? But as you said, in the game it cost us, but with us providing an open door for Ipswich and Leeds to run through and take some advantage in the title race or in the automatic promotion race, both of them failed, which was absolute delight. I've never watched other teams' results more, I don't think, than I have Ipswich and Leeds in the last couple of weeks. But I'm going to make a bold prediction here, Pete, and you can probably shoot me down because you do actually work for Southampton in terms of commentating on highlights and stuff. But and Opta disagrees with me as well, actually. I'll give you the stats. Opta have given Leicester an 62% chance of winning the title and an 84% chance of automatic promotion. And they've only given Southampton a 3% chance of winning the title and an 11% chance of automatic promotion. But I would suggest, and the form table would also suggest, that Southampton are carrying more momentum than the three teams above them at the moment. And I am going to predict that Southampton are going to get one of the two automatic promotion places because Opta's percentages is based on loads of different stuff, but I don't think it takes into account the human element of momentum. Leicester, stuttering. Ipswich, stuttering. Leeds, stuttering. Southampton, top two, I reckon.
Well, there's a funny thing with Southampton. They've actually had an injury to their goalkeeper, which means that McCarthy's actually in the side, which I think is great for them because Bazunu's awful. The thing is with Southampton, they score goals. They've got an awful lot of goal scorers. I will go so far as saying, and I agree, I think Southampton have got an excellent chance. I will go so far as saying that if... And this is a Peter Selby prediction. Now, if Leicester do not beat West Brom on Saturday, I believe that we will not get automatic promotion. Now, a defeat kind of goes hand in hand with slipping up and pushing, obviously being further down the league. But when you look at Southampton away at Cardiff, who should be beaten there, you then move on to Leeds away at Middlesbrough. The next game, Ipswich will not be playing. The next game will then be Leicester against Southampton on the Tuesday. That's my main reason. I do not believe that Leicester cannot win against West Brom and then turn it around against Southampton. I don't believe that, because Southampton will be smelling blood. They will be anyway, unless something happens against Cardiff. Leicester beat West Brom, Cardiff beat Southampton, then okay, happy days. So that's my prediction. Leicester will, even if they draw, I don't believe that will be enough. Because I think this Southampton side, the way they're playing, first of all, they played the other day and they won 3-0 against Preston. The three goals were scored in the first half. Southampton were absolutely devastating in the first half. Flying forward, they had two attempts from 50 yards. They tried to chip the goalkeeper twice from 50 yards. That's how, in the first half, Shea Adams tried to chip the goalkeeper from 50. I mean, that's how much confidence they have. It's not the score lines. It's the amount of goals they're scoring, and it's the confidence they have. They will always concede goals and chances. We saw that again at St Mary's when Leicester played there. I know we're kind of skipping on a game, but I'll be away. They are quite open at the back. They push players forward. They've got the best right back in the league in Kyle Walker-Peters, easily for me, excellent player. They've got the best ball playing centre half in the league. I know Yannick Vestergaard plays well with the ball at his feet, but obviously former Saints, but they've got Howard Bellis, who essentially what we need to do is look out for his long balls. He will come forward anywhere near the centre circle. If he chips the ball over the defence, he can put a bit of backspin on, okay, that Scotty Scheffler would be impressed with. So, really, really good centre-half passing-wise. They can be got at, don't get me wrong, they can be got at. And then you look at what they have compared to Leicester going forward. They've got a big man up front. They've got Shea Adams, of course, Leicester-ish. Leicester lad, isn't it? Leicester. Hinkley, who's scoring goals. Yes, he'll miss a few in that. But off him, you will have the Armstrongs. Stuart Armstrong, excellent player. The sort of player, he's different to Dewsbury Hall, but that kind of buzzing player around there, but he's very technical, excellent player, scores goals, crosses, shoots, kind of an all-action number eight. They will have Adam Armstrong, busy around the penalty area, number nine, but pulls out wide, excellent control, can finish. They will have David Brooks, who's far too good for this league, who would be number one on my wish list if Leicester get promoted. Excellent footballer, quick, incisive, again, busy in around the penalty area, around that centre forward, excellent player. They might have Fraser, little winger, but again, too good for this league. He could probably play in this league until he's 40. They have many, many options. Steady players in midfield. Downs, they've got Smallbone who can pick a pass. It's a really, really good side going forward. It's almost completely the opposite to what Leicester have. It's the other way round. We've got a good goalkeeper in the defence. Yes, it is good, and we do have the best defensive record. But going forward, Southampton can rip you to shreds, and they generally can. They missed a load of chances in the second half. So I worry. I really worry about you. I really do. If we think that we're going to beat Southampton, or if we think that we can play anywhere near the way that we've played in recent games, we've got absolutely no chance. I thought Norwich were quite poor when they played Leicester, okay? And Leicester turned that around. Okay, yes, it was a short corner goal, etc. But turned it around okay. They got away with it against Birmingham, and they've been dreadful in the last two games. You've got a side turning up who have won four on the bounce, top of my head, and they are absolutely flying. Flying. And if one player is not playing well, my God, they can turn things around in their side. They can switch players in the starting lineup, and they will. And they will make subs. And all of a sudden, Adam Armstrong will be down the centre. Then he'll be out wide. Then you'll have Stuart Armstrong attacking from midfield. And David Brooks will come on. And they'll bring on Mara from off the bench. And Adozie, who's been a I think is a fabulous talent. They've got an awful lot going forward. And yeah, I really do worry. So I think we need to beat West Brom. We need to beat West Brom because, I'm not being funny, if I I've been at the races today, been at Newmarket, yeah? Had a good day, actually. But if I was to take my blue spectacles off and I put my betting hat on, I think they're a fabulous bet, Southampton, to win at the King Power. I really do. Both teams to score as well, probably, but I think they're a fabulous bet because what they have is, I think, completely different to what any other club have in this league, and it's exactly what Leicester will struggle against. So I know that's quite a damning statement for a team who could be top of the league by the time they play them, but I think Leicester need 3 points. Couldn't care less about the performance. I know I mentioned the performance in relation to the way that Southampton are playing, but they need 3 points against West Brom because even with the biggest kick up the backside between Saturday when they come off the field just before 3 o'clock, because it's an early kickoff, and then the game on Tuesday night at 8 o'clock, even with a kick up the backside, the biggest kick you can ever imagine, I don't think they could get up for that game if they don't beat West Brom.
No, you can't go from losing 1-0 at Millwall, losing 1-0 at Plymouth, and then either losing or drawing against West Brom and go into a game against Southampton, who, as you say, are a very dangerous and informed side. You wouldn't be able to take any degree of confidence or conviction into the game against Southampton if you came off the back of those three results. I will just flip it slightly in terms of previewing the next couple of games and discuss how things might be slightly easier for Leicester in terms of their attacking threat, because Millwall and Plymouth, yes, both in the lower reaches of the Championship, but they, like many other teams, made sure that they were very disciplined defensively. Not particularly ambitious going forward. I think Millwall probably were a little bit more than Plymouth, which makes Leicester's performance against Millwall all the more disappointing because there were more gaps to play in there, I think, than against Plymouth. But West Brom are a decent side. Play some decent football. Southampton are obviously, as you've just summarised them very nicely there, for those that haven't seen very much of them this season. You've seen pretty much every game. But those are two sides that are going to want to, at certain stages of the game at least, want to attack Leicester, which should leave a few more gaps for Leicester to try and play in. I think Enzo's system is fairly steady in terms of its build-up anyway, but I think that is slowed down even more by the fact that there is just basically a brick wall of players between Leicester and the goal, and there has been probably for the last 10-15 games probably. But I think West Brom and Southampton, well, certainly Southampton, will be a lot more ambitious, which might help Leicester. I was just watching a clip earlier of Leicester West Brom earlier on in the season. I remember watching it on the big screen at the first ever Nottingham Forest fan zone.
Oh yes,
and clenching my fist inside my coat pocket just to celebrate. But the breakaway goal to win it at the end with Dewsbury Hall and Winks. I mean, have they got that kind of breakaway goal in their legs now at this stage of the season? The minutes they've played, probably not. But you know, they're both absolutely busting a gut to get forward, and Dewsbury Hall squares it and Winks has to stretch and slide and tucks it away for the winner. And, you know, I think those kind of transitional opportunities will be more available against teams like West Brom and Southampton, which could favour Leicester. However, you've still got to have the quality and the self-belief in the final third to convert those chances, regardless of how you get them. Whether you get them with Enzo ball, slowly, slowly, passy-passy, tiki-taka, whatever you want to call it, or whether you get it through a spin them around, miss the middle third, counter-attack at pace. It doesn't matter how you get there, you've still got to finish the chances off. And that's... I think we will probably get more clear-cut chances possibly against the likes of West Brom and Southampton. You know, look through at Southampton's scorelines, they're winning like 4-3 and 3-2, proper big scoring games. So Leicester are going to get opportunities, but I fancy, from your summary, I fancy Southampton to score more goals than Leicester.
That's the thing. They will score. They will try and score more goals than you, which every club does. But that's the way they play. It's like we know we're going to concede chances. To speak more positively about Leicester against Southampton, the way to get at Southampton is down the sides. They will push Walker Peters very high up the pitch. If you can get behind him, fine. The left back position is not strong. Bree or Manning, good players, but again, they get forward very, very easily. And you'll be looking down the side. So Fataru and also Mavadidi should, if they get the chance to then run at others at the back, they should be fine, because you've got Bednarek, who's not quick, very Vestergaard-like. And then you've got possibly Stevens, who steps forward. And then you've got Harwood Bellis, who is improving with his defensive work, but still isn't... he isn't, say, Vass, even though Vass has been disappointing with his errors, etc. So you can get down the sides, you can get at them. For me, the most important player for Leicester, apart from the wingers, would actually be either a Hamza Chowdhury or Ricardo Pereira, whoever pushes into midfield, because that's the player who is going to be shielding the defensive line from those attacking midfielders, from your Brooks, from your, even though Adam Armstrong is a number nine centre forward, but he does drop deep and go out wide, from your Frasers, from your Stuart Armstrongs. Those players are the players who really make Southampton tick. And if they get beyond the midfield of Ndidi and Winks, then that player will need to be really on form. That's going to be very important. But then again, we can do that to them as well. Once we get beyond their midfield, they can be got at. Now, I mentioned about the goalkeeper. Obviously, McCarthy comes in. But again, it would be an aspect of the side you look at and go, okay, you know, let's get at them. They can be got at. But honestly, when they put it together in the final third, which they have numerous players, and by the way, they all will be forward, don't be surprised if a Brooks gets along the byline. They'll try and get along the byline a few times, and don't be surprised to see four or five red and white shirts in the penalty area or on the edge of the penalty. It will happen. Something which I've been imploring Leicester to do. But, again, but they will make themselves open at the back, so they can be got at. We pick them off really well at St Mary's. Saying that, we play West Brom first. And the way the fixtures lie, I think, are quite kind to Leicester in terms of their times. We play first on Saturday, and if we pick up 3 points, the whole world of pressure is then going to lie on the likes of Southampton to go to Cardiff and win, and then Leeds away at Middlesbrough. Okay, we then play, obviously, Southampton again. After that, Leeds go to QPR on Friday, and then it's the turn of Ipswich, who will be watching all of this, and God knows what the position of the league will be in, but they will have to wait until 8 o'clock to go to Hull on the Saturday. In the meantime, on that Saturday, you've got Southampton at home against Stoke, which you can only surmise will be a pretty substantial home win. And then we go to Plymouth, and then obviously you've got Ipswich away at Coventry. So I just look at the way that the games lie, and I go, actually, I quite like them in favour of Leicester. You know, we can beat, if we beat West Brom, then confidence will be high, and it goes into a massive game against Southampton. You could almost say, Rob, that if Leicester beat West Brom on Saturday, you could almost say, looking at the league and looking at those games, and I'm looking squarely in the eyes of Leeds United here, squarely in the eyes, Leeds will play twice, if I can just confirm that. No, they won't. They would have played at Middlesbrough. They will play away at QPR before we then play again. If Leicester win on Saturday against West Brom, we could then go into the game against Southampton knowing a win would seal our promotion. That's very easily, that could easily happen. We've got a game in hand. We beat West Brom. Leeds slip up away at Middlesbrough. Very easily to see that. And then we look at that game and go, there we go. Here's the game against Southampton. Win this game, lads, and we are, bar some really interesting results, we are possibly promoted. Gone are the days of we wanting to win the league. Of course we do, but let's just get promoted. Doesn't matter now. Yeah, I think that it would make Tuesday night an amazing game until the first whistle's blown. But if we beat West Brom, who remind are in fifth place, and they had a pretty decent unbeaten run before losing last time out, they're pretty much safe in that position. Okay. Yeah, I'm going to go for the fact that if we don't beat West Brom, I think we will lose at home against Southampton, and then we're in a whole world of relying on playoffs. If we beat West Brom, we then go into the Southampton game knowing, look, lads, whoever the starting lineup is and whoever comes on, it's now 90 minutes. The whole season comes down to this 90 minutes. If you win, we're up, pretty much. But if you don't win, then there will be some big, big games to come. That's what I reckon. I reckon if we beat West Brom, we should be fine. But if we do not beat them, I don't think we'll get automatic.
So there we go. Let's finish it without an if. Let's say Leicester are going to beat West Brom on Saturday, and that is going to directly contribute to Leicester beating Southampton on Tuesday. Two home wins. Leicester City are promoted to the Premier League. Thank goodness for that.
Yes, because if we beat West Brom and we beat Southampton in front of Leeds, we've got a game in hand, so we're a point already. We'll be 4 points ahead of them, and we would still be 4 points ahead even if they were to win at Middlesbrough, essentially. That's the way it would lie with, what, two games to go. So we'll be 4 points ahead of them with two games to go. Southampton will be too far back by then. They would be on the same amount of points because obviously we would have beaten them. So with two games to go, we're 4 points ahead. I'm not being funny, but if you let that slip, then it's on their head. So that's why I'm saying that. That's why I'm saying we beat West Brom, you go into Southampton game, you win that, and you're up. What are we going to do against West Brom? Of course, I'm going to say a home win. I can only say it's going to be a home win, and it's going to be a really nervy, either late winner or hanging on. And do you know what? I'm not only going to go for a Leicester win, and I'm not only going to go for a 2-1 Leicester win, but I'm going to go for the time of the goal as well, being 80 minutes. So we've got a lovely 10 minutes plus 9 minutes added time to hang on and to chew all our nails. But I'm going to go for big Yannick Vestergaard to score what will go down as one of the most, not famous goals, but one of the most important goals of the season.
Leicester need a hero, and you've chosen a very unlikely one. So I'm going to choose a slightly more well-known, slightly more heroic hero, shall we say, in Leicester's recent history. I am going for a very nervy, similar to you, 1-0 Leicester, Vardy to score one of the most important goals of his Leicester career.
Oh, it would be something if Vardy beats West Brom, who's got a brilliant record, of course, against, and all those goals against them at their place, etc., and at home. But wouldn't it be something if Vardy is the guy to beat West Brom and beat Southampton and get Leicester promoted? The TIFO, by the way, by the ever-impressive Union FS about Jamie Vardy has been signed off, so that will be done for the final game against Blackburn at home. Hopefully a promotion party, and hopefully it's a sign for Jamie Vardy to appreciate and to, you know, the guy who got the goals to get us promoted, and he actually signs on and stays for another year in the Premier League. That would be nice. But okay then, Rob. Scenario time, because we can't predict every single game and we're running out of time. What happens if we beat West Brom? What happens against Southampton? And what happens if we do not beat West Brom? What happens against Southampton?
If we beat West Brom, we beat Southampton in a 4-3 thriller. If we fail to beat West Brom, I can't predict Leicester to lose. It's extremely rare. I think, off the top of my head, I think we've only ever done it once on this podcast ever, which, you know, is a hint to the slightly blue-tinted spectacles that we quite often wear. When it comes to the prediction, we'll stand here for an hour and slate Leicester and then still predict them not to lose the next game. So I think if we fail to beat West Brom, which I'm going to call a draw, by the way, then I think we might sort of scrape a 2-2 against Southampton. So I still can't predict Leicester to lose, even though we're in a terrible run of form. Pressure's getting to us from outside the club, from around the top of the table, everywhere. But if we don't beat West Brom, I think we might still pinch a point against Southampton. And maybe the magnitude of the game will make the players rise to the occasion.
Okay, yeah, I agree. If we don't beat West Brom, if we draw, then we might get something against Southampton, possibly a draw. But I honestly, if we lose to West Brom, I just can't see us beating Southampton. I really can't. Their tails are going to be so far up, and I don't think Leicester could be will be able to turn that around mentally rather than just through pure football talent. If we lose to West Brom, I just can't see us being Saints. If we draw against West Brom, maybe a draw. But if it is, I cannot see anything but goals against Southampton at both ends. I really can't. I think it's going to be an absolute humdinger. Like, what a game of football. Even if we beat West Brom, which hopefully we do, and we are, 2-1, Vestergaard header, 80 minutes. But I still think it's going to be an amazing game of football against Southampton, just for the neutral, basically. It will be great. But fingers crossed, Rob, because the next time we talk, we could be promoted or we could be looking at playoffs, one or t'other. Of course, it's not over if we do drop out of the top two. Of course, it's not over. But this podcast is over for now. I am going to go on holiday, on honeymoon. So I will talk to you, Rob, on the far side of that, unless something rather dramatic happens, like Leicester get promoted. Put it that way, if that happens, we're in a little chat, you know what I mean? And I'll be sat with a fair few beers, so get ready. But that's it for Fox's sake. Anything else, Rob?
No, you enjoy your honeymoon, and hopefully we'll have 6 points, or maybe even 9 to talk about by the time you're back.
Okay, we'll be back soon. Fingers crossed, it all goes well this weekend, and next week, and the weekend after. Ooh, up the city.